As my young friends to the right will attest, and as some of you in the congregation this morning will also attest, it is time for finals just north of us. And so, in an act of sympathy and solidarity with the students of SMU, this morning I'm going to administer a pop quiz. Yes, groan, groan. For how many of you is that oft-recurring nightmare about showing up for the final only to realize you've never attended the class now coming true? Anyone experiencing that? Very good. Subject this morning is art history. I figure since last week we started with football, it was time to give the liberal arts majors their due. Fear not, to ease the anxiety, the quiz has but one question, and it is multiple choice. Here it is. Which of the following was not painted by Norman Rockwell? Is it A, The Problem We All Live With? Is it B, Freedom From Want? Is it C, The Runaway? Or D, The Peaceable Kingdom? Got it? Which of those was not painted by Norman Rockwell? Well, if you guessed D, The Peaceable Kingdom, give yourself full credit. That is the correct answer. The Peaceable Kingdom was painted by Edward Hicks. Now, I'll grant from the top that the quiz would have been easier if I had been able to flash pictures of the paintings on screens in the chapel, but we don't believe in screens around here, thinking that, you know, if Jesus didn't need them, we don't need them either. But the pictures, I trust, are familiar enough to you. The Problem We All Live With is an iconic image of the civil rights movement, depicting six-year-old African-American Ruby Bridges on her way to an all-white school being escorted by four U.S. Marshals against a backdrop of racial hatred. You probably know Freedom From Want as the Thanksgiving picture. You know the one with the apron-clad grandmother gently lowering a fully cooked turkey on a Thanksgiving table laden with food, surrounded by eager-looking family members. And The Runaway might have been a little more difficult until you picture in your mind a little boy seated beside a Massachusetts state trooper at the counter of a diner, the little boy's bandana-bound belongings on a stick perched against his stool, indicating he's not been able to get very far. And I think The Peaceable Kingdom would probably be just as familiar to you, not least because there are at least 61 versions of the same scene that Hicks painted. And when you remember it, the scene comes to life. It features wolves living with lambs and leopards lying down with kids and a calf and a lion and a fatling together. You see a cow and a bear grazing and a lion eating straw like an ox. And before them all, a little child leads them. There is a softness, even a gentleness, to the scene. But then, if you look at the painting more closely, you see in the background William Penn making a treaty with the Indians. This beloved American painting is based on an equally loved biblical passage, namely the passage that was read today from the prophet Isaiah. Isaiah paints in the same style of Rockwell and Hicks, or rather, Rockwell and Hicks paint in the style of Isaiah. Some have called Edward Hicks a Quaker utopian visionary, while Norman Rockwell is noted for his idealism. "I paint life as I would like it to be," Rockwell once explained. And the picture Isaiah paints is of life the way God would like it to be. Little wonder then that Hicks painted the scene so many times. And there is nothing sordid or ugly in Rockwell's work. It is all Americana. The diner counter, the firehouse, the doctor's office, scouts on campout. Nothing violent or brutal in the works of Edward Hicks. All is calm. All is bright, as we will sing very soon. But if we focus only on the idealistic and utopian aspects of Hicks and Rockwell's paintings, to say nothing of Isaiah's, then we risk missing the decidedly political aspect of their work. In The Peaceable Kingdom, Hicks has included alongside the docile animals the treaty between Penn and the Indians because he believed very firmly that that is how men and women of different tribes and nations should live together, namely in peace, honoring the commitments they have made to one another. And Rockwell celebrated the American defense of freedoms in his famous series, The Four Freedoms, including the freedom from want. But Rockwell also criticized the denial of full freedom, particularly to African Americans, in his work, The Problem We All Live With and Southern Justice. Friends, Isaiah's vision of the peaceful kingdom is also inescapably political. You might not think it to look at Isaiah's canvas, in one corner of which is an old lifeless stump that Isaiah paints in grays and browns to connote its barrenness. But if you know how to read the painting, you know that this is the stump of Jesse, who was the father of David and thus the progenitor of a long line of kings. This is a family tree, then, only it has come to the end of the line with no future in sight. But if you look at the painting again, this time a little more closely, you notice a small green shoot gingerly rising from the base of the stump. It is a sign of what Walter Brueggemann calls the impossible possibility of new life from deep failure. In Isaiah's day, the deep failure meant the deep failure of that very line of kings descended from Jesse and David. These kings had squandered their heritage, indeed their blessing, through corruption and immorality and bad decisions, which led to a divided and ultimately a defeated kingdom. Today, I wonder whether we are not experiencing a deep failure of our own political system. Divided government, which was the genius of our founding fathers, who arrayed the powers of government among three separate but equal branches, is now simply divisive government. Major legislation is all but impossible to move through the Congress, comprehensive immigration reform being the chief example, and the Affordable Care Act the notable exception. The major political parties are not simply divided between themselves, but also among themselves, establishment conservatives battling Tea Party Republicans, while on the other side of the aisle, liberal Democrats wage war against moderates for control of the party to determine who will be the next presidential candidate. And all of this may be good for MSNBC and Fox News, who must have something to feed the insatiable news cycle. But it's not good for most people. The people victimized by the failure of government to be productive include the usual suspects: the poor, the unemployed, those who have entered the country illegally and their children, members of the armed services and veterans, and the homeless. In a sign of the times, 1/3 of the nation's bank tellers receive some sort of public assistance, ranging from Medicaid to food stamps. This despite the fact that the major banks for whom they work were the recipients of billions of dollars of federal money in bailouts. 900,000 veterans and 5,000 active duty military members are currently dependent in whole or in part on food stamps to feed themselves and their families. And yet Congress wants to cut $40 million from the food stamp program. Fast food workers, who are among this nation's lowest paid workers in the labor market, are currently striking for an increase in pay. doubling their wages from the $7.50 an hour they currently receive to $15 an hour, we think would be outrageous. Captains of industry say we can't increase the minimum wage. It would increase our costs. It would raise unemployment. But even doubling the wage of fast food workers would only raise the price of a Big Mac anywhere from 68 cents to a dollar. Problems beset our country. And we all look for a leader, regardless of political party, regardless of ideological commitments. And yet we have little confidence that the president can solve these problems. 55% of those surveyed disapprove of Mr. Obama's job performance, but we have even less confidence that the Congress can solve the problems. Nearly 85% of us disapprove of the job they're doing, or not doing, however you choose to look at it. What's missing in our national life is the sort of leader the prophet Isaiah envisions, a leader with a spirit of wisdom and understanding, of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. Gene Tucker says that wisdom and understanding refer to practical wisdom that enables a leader to face reality and deal with it fairly. Counsel and might, Tucker says, refer to diplomatic and military judgment and authority. Knowledge and fear of the Lord refer to the ideal king's piety. What it all comes to is that the new leader, the hope of Israel and our hope too, is possessed of a wise discernment that enables him to do justice, or in Walter Brueggemann's phrase, to create a fully functioning social apparatus. We want someone who can make the country work, who can see to it that right is done, that justice is executed, because justice is fundamentally what this nation is committed to. And yet justice is elusive in America. Justice seems to have eluded the hundreds of thousands of men, mostly black and Hispanic, who languish in the nation's prisons, sent there under sentences that were tougher on crime than they were smart about it. Justice seems to have eluded the women who do not yet receive equal pay for equal work and are often denied meaningful opportunities for advancement and promotion. Justice seems to have eluded gay men and women who struggle for the right to marry in many states, to say nothing of the right not to be discriminated against on the basis of their sexual orientation. Justice seems to have eluded homeless Americans, many of them mentally ill or struggling with addictions, who do not receive the help and the housing they desperately need. Justice seems to have eluded both those who need health insurance but still can't get it, and those who had it but whose policies have been canceled. Justice eludes the millions of people around the world who subsist on incomes of less than $2 a day, who work in dangerous conditions and live in substandard housing, whose lives are racked by poverty and illiteracy and disease. Justice eludes refugees from murderous governments or rebel groups. Justice, to which this nation is committed, seems so elusive. And yet one sign of God's coming kingdom, for which the prophets call us to repent, is the establishment of justice. When Jesus comes again to judge the living and the dead, as we profess to believe that he will, Jesus, as judge, will sort out our conflicting interests and claims, those that engage individuals and groups and nations. Jesus, the judge, will settle disputes over who belongs and who ought to be included, and my guess is that boundary, that circle, will be drawn incredibly broad. Jesus, the judge, will make it possible for every person to be assured of security and well-being, not through systems of weapons or even social security, but through the grace and providence and generosity of God. And then, my brothers and sisters, when all is well, because all is right, the wolf shall live with the lamb, and red America will live with blue America. The leopard shall lie down with a kid, and Arabs and Israelis will lie down at night in peaceful neighboring villages. The calf and the lion and the fatling together, showing Christians and Muslims and Jews how to worship in harmony. The cow and the bear shall graze, the lion shall eat straw like the ox, and their young shall lie down together. That today the children of Martin Luther King Jr. and Nelson Mandela now work and eat and shop and pray together with the children of George Wallace and F.W. de Klerk suggest that that day may be close at hand. That sign gives us hope. On that day, the root of Jesse, the impossible possibility of new life, shall stand as a sign to the peoples of justice everywhere. My friends, can you picture it?